Chapter 9, Social Conditions in the Ecclesias. That there has been a remarkable change in the social life of the Ecclesia over the past 50 years, there can be no doubt. This is not really surprising, in view of the changes that have taken place in the society in which we live. The people of God have always lived their lives in the context of the social conditions of their contemporaries, and although they do not, or should not, conform to the values of society in the world, they must inevitably be influenced by the social mores of their day and age. Abraham lived like a nomadic tribesman, accumulated a vast wealth in cattle and goods, owned slaves, practiced polygamy and had concubines, like tribal leaders of his day did. Yet, in it all and through it all, he kept faith with God and lived in anticipation of the promises. David, selected to be God's king over Israel, fought mighty battles, had many wives and children, grew rich from the plunder of his enemies, and acted at times with what seems to us today to have been unnecessary ruthlessness towards his foes. Yet, through it all, he retained his faith in the everlasting covenant, and though he dwelt in a palace, he would rather dwell in the house of the Lord forever. His social life was that of a warrior king, but his heart was with the Lord. In New Testament times, the church was made up of men and women of varying backgrounds, but the strong influence of Roman and Greek civilization is evident in the way the believers lived and behaved. There were among them prosperous businessmen with large estates and opulent houses, who owned slaves over whom they had complete control, and there were artisans and small manufacturers like Aquila and Paul himself, whose trade was tent-making. Many were slaves in other people's households, like Onesimus, who belonged, by the way, to another Christian, Philemon. We should find it very difficult to justify such relationships today, but they lived in a world in which such conditions obtained, and had to live out their Christianity in the social environment of their times. Our own forebears lived in a quite different world to our own. John Thomas and Robert Roberts were in many ways typical Victorians. The polemical style of Dr. Thomas, which many find repugnant today, was quite common in the aggressive pamphleteering times in which he lived. When we are told with an amused smile that Robert Roberts used to walk ahead of his wife Jane to the meeting, with the obedient children strung out behind, we realise that he was behaving in the manner of any other Victorian father. Yet in all this very different social life, the truth still ruled their lives. We need not therefore be at all surprised if things are different now to when I was a young man in the Northampton Ecclesia 50 years ago. It would be surprising if they were not. Nor is it to be supposed that all the changes are necessarily for the worse. Some may be and some may not. Because our society has vastly improved its standard of living, with a more even distribution of national wealth, the Christadelphian body has certainly got better off, and there is a lot less real poverty now than 50 years ago. I can well recall the collections we used to have in the time of the Great Depression for the relief of distress among South Wales miners, many of whom were on the borderline of starvation. Some of our brethren of the older generation will still talk of their experiences down in the valleys in those grim years. The recession from which we are presently suffering is not to be compared with it, for unemployment today does not bring the blighting hardship which it did then. In those days, a brother who owned a car was a rarity, and we thought of him as being one of the better off. Today it is unusual not to own one, and many young people get one almost as soon as they leave school. Anybody then who could travel abroad for a holiday was certainly thought of as one of the rich in this world, whereas now it is a commonplace among working people. Compared with them, we live in nicer homes, have luxuries undreamed of, and an altogether easier and softer life. Old age is no longer the dreaded spectre of making do in a rented room, with little warmth and hardly enough to eat. Pensions are sufficient to live respectably. Many of our older folk own their homes, and when they can no longer manage on their own, they have the homes for the elderly which can provide comfort and companionship in old age. In many ecclesias, arranging brethren wishing to dispense the funds of the ecclesia in charitable provision for less fortunate members have some difficulty in finding anybody needing it. 50 years ago, it was the funds which were lacking, not the would-be recipients. It is not surprising, therefore, in this welfare state society, to find that conditions in the ecclesia have changed. And we can be thankful to our Heavenly Father that they have, though there are also obvious dangers in it too. Jeshua and waxed fat and kicked was written of Israel, but could also be true of spiritual Israel. The state of poverty does not necessarily guarantee spiritual health, no more than a state of material well-being necessarily indicates spiritual poverty. But the balance of Scripture is certainly on the side of the poor, and Jesus himself has clearly indicated that riches make it harder to enter the kingdom of God. Of the advanced educational opportunities open to our young people today, I have already commented in chapter 6. This in itself has led to a great change in the status of the jobs taken up by both brethren and sisters. Whereas somebody with a degree was a rarity in our community, we now abound in PhDs. A brother doctor was a man to give an awed respect to. But now we have not only doctors, but every kind of specialist, consultants, psychologists, and members of all kinds of professions. Teaching in my young days was pretty well the pinnacle of ambition for even our cleverer people. But now it is little thought of, though still, in the writer's opinion, an honourable and worthwhile occupation for any brother or sister. Many of our brethren are at the top of their profession, captains of industry, leaders in their field of study, and some of them, at any rate, do a good job in leavening with their Christian influence areas of human life which would have been inaccessible to us in the past. I remember a few years ago I had been asked to give a special lecture in the Birmingham Town Hall, a combined effort of all the Birmingham ecclesias, and a brother phoned me up to ask me to go back with him afterwards for a cup of coffee. He was one of our big men who had become very important in the industrial world, and as we lived at the time in Basingstoke, he asked if I knew the Thornycroft works there. Indeed I did, for I had to go there occasionally to discuss apprenticeships for lads leaving school. But imagine my surprise when my brother informed me that he had bought them out a year or two ago for X millions of pounds. It turned out, as I discovered over the cup of coffee, that he had been joint managing director of British Leyland, and he told me that when he was on the board, he was the only member who wasn't a lord or a sir. Now, many of us, I certainly, would have found it difficult to mix in such exalted company and retain our integrity as Christadelphians. Yet our brother informed me that he used to tell them all about the purpose of God in relation to Middle East politics and the state of Israel. How else would these lords and sirs have heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher? There are numerous ways in which we have changed through the years, largely through the changed social circumstances of our time. Christadelphian weddings are generally very different social occasions from what they used to be, partly because so many of our halls are now registered for marriages to take place. I suppose most weddings among Christadelphians in my young days were conducted at the registry office and were very unpretentious affairs. Indeed, it was commonly thought that any kind of display was worldly, and church weddings with bridesmaids and full regalia were one of the signs of the apostasy. I recall one brother now dead who considered it ostentatious even to have a car to transport the happy couple, and affirmed that when he was married, they left the registry office on a tram car. Most of us will consider this a little ridiculous today, but it is a fact that Christadelphian weddings are often, or even mostly, very like church weddings, except that they are held in our own halls. Whether this is progress or retrogression is, I suppose, a matter of opinion. Fraternal gatherings have also become much more numerous and more widely attended. Years ago, if an ecclesia held a gathering at all, it would be attended by members from nearby ecclesias only. But with easier transport and more affluence, gatherings nowadays often have visitors from a very wide area, and occasionally from abroad. There are some parts of the country where it is possible to go to some kind of gathering almost any Saturday throughout the year, and I well recall a very good brother in the Midlands saying to me, as long as we've got our meetings on Sunday and the fraternal gathering on Saturday, we don't need the world. It reminded me of a saying of Brother Alfred Norris, that fraternal gatherings can be the Christadelphian way of going to the pictures. Notice in passing that there was no reference to whether the world needs us. There is no doubt that these kind of gatherings are something unique in our community and have contributed much to our corporate life. But it may also have tended to encourage a closed shop mentality, in which we could easily forget our obligation to the world in which we live and think that we are busy in the truth because we are always at some meeting or other. Fraternal gatherings certainly provide an opportunity to consider some aspects of our discipleship which would be inappropriate at normal meetings. And they do have a place, but there is always the danger that they become just an entertainment. And the words of Ezekiel 33 verses 31 to 32 could become true of us. They come unto thee as the people cometh, and they sit before thee as my people, and they hear thy words, but they will not do them. And thou art unto them as a very lovely song of one that hath a pleasant voice, and can play well on an instrument, that is to say, an entertainment. The growth of the youth circle movement with almost weekly youth weekends is another change that has come with increasing prosperity. For our young people have the means of travel and can, like their elders, be off somewhere most weekends. It is noticeable, by the way, that the ecclesial fraternals are generally lacking in young people and seem to be composed mainly of older faces. There is no doubt that youth circles have been a fruitful source of recruitment to our numbers, and much more is done for our young people today, though it would be a mistake to assume that nothing used to be done in the past. Most ecclesias were aware of the need to help the young, and we did have activities in which they were particularly involved, though there was not so much emphasis on youth then, and the young people took more part in other ecclesial activities, with more give and take between the age groups. The generation gap had not been invented 50 years ago. I think perhaps one way in which things have changed for the better, though not all would agree that it is for the better, is in a greater freedom to consider new things without condemning them, just because they were done by the churches. We used to have almost a phobia about anything which other people did. Anything like a sale of work to raise funds was a sure sign of the apostasy and used as an accusation against them. Now we have our own sales of work and often proudly relate how much money has been raised for this fund or that. They still have their opponents, of course, but most of us think it quite a reasonable way of supplementing our various funds whilst encouraging at the same time fraternal involvement of brethren and sisters both in the supply and the purchase of goods. In some cases, too, the sale is combined with a meeting of a devotional character. The fact that other churches do similar things is surely no criterion. They also sing hymns and say prayers. Many ecclesias now have special services at Christmas or Easter, with hymns and readings appropriate to the season, hoping to use these times for interesting others in the faith. What can be wrong with this, apart from the fact that other people do it? We have a fair number of Christmas hymns in our hymn book, so why not use them at the time when the birth of Jesus is in so many minds? One of my best friends in the truth, now asleep, had to confess to me that he had nothing against these hymns as long as they were not sung at Christmas time. Coffee mornings, mother and toddler groups and things of this kind have also been introduced by some ecclesias to try to make contact with the great public outside, with whom in the past we have had so little to do. It could be that the future of our preaching will depend more on this type of personal service and involvement than in holding lectures to which nobody comes. This remains to be seen, but surely such endeavours to help our fellows, be it in such a small way, cannot be wrong in the eyes of him who mixed so easily with publicans and sinners. Yet another change which has taken place in my time in the body is in the care of the old and the sick. This again has some relationship to the social conditions in our contemporary society, in which the organised caring services have proliferated, and the means to offer such help to the less fortunate members of society have also been increased. When we perhaps rightly allude to the declension in morality and the standards of behaviour in the world, we sometimes forget that not everything has worsened. There is no doubt that the attitude to old age and sickness, both as regards the mentally and the physically sick, has in many ways been vastly improved, and we ought not to sneer at the compassionate society, nor at the do-gooders who help to keep it going. There are literally millions of people in Great Britain alone who spend many hours of their time in voluntary service to the community, in such things as Meals on Wheels, unpaid hospital work, physically handicapped societies, and scores of other endeavours to alleviate the suffering of others. Far from ridiculing their efforts, I personally often feel ashamed at the little I do by comparison. It is a source of satisfaction to many in our community that such caring has been reflected in our own brotherhood, and the home and hospital in Birmingham, and the other rest homes and sheltered housing schemes in other parts of the country, are undoubtedly developments which have met a real need, and which many of our old members in bygone generations would have thought of as bliss, by comparison with the loneliness and poverty which many of them experienced in their old age or sickness. They would not have been possible without the money provided by some of our wealthier brethren, nor could they be maintained in the penurious conditions which largely prevailed in our community 50 years ago. So we may well give thanks to God for the changed conditions, and for the dedication of those who have worked so hard, not only to get the homes established, but also to keep them running. They can do nothing but good, as long as they are a means of expressing love for our less fortunate and elderly brethren and sisters, and not a substitute for it. There are other ways in which Christadelphian life has kept up with the changed social conditions of the 20th century, but what has been written will be sufficient to illustrate it, and there need be no fears simply because changes have taken place, for this is inevitable. The important thing is not to resist all change, or to assume that it must be for the worse because it is new, but to try to ensure that we remain loyal to Christ in whatever circumstances we may be plunged. Jesus pointed out that no man, having tasted old wine, straightway desires new, for he says the old is better. There is a natural inclination towards the well-known and well-worn things of the past, but in the case to which Jesus was referring, the old was not better. He had new wine to give them, but they preferred the old ways of the Pharisees and the rabbis, and rejected his offer. By the way, have you ever noticed that when Peter and the apostles came to them preaching the new gospel of salvation at Pentecost, they said, "These men are full of new wine," Acts chapter 2, verse 13. How right they were, but in a different sense to what they meant. Many of the changes which have taken place in our brotherhood have been resisted by those who pine for the old ways and say the old is better. But although a thing is not necessarily good because it is new, it is equally true that it is not necessarily bad. In regard to the care of the elderly, and the attitude to poverty and caring for the handicapped, those who sigh for the good old days should certainly read some of the social histories of 19th century England.